here we are. This is Sex, Love, Psychedelics, and I'm your host, Dr. Kat, bringing you psychosexual conversations that will leave you intellectually turned on and hungry for more. Hey, lovers. I've just gotten back from the Psychedelic Science Conference in Denver, and it was wild, to say the least. There were over 12,000 attendees and hundreds of talks about cutting-edge research and therapies and discoveries around the power of psychedelics as medicine. There were so many shares from my very personal idols in the field of psychedelics and therapy. I was like drooling over all of this and like on the edge of my seat, like, yeah. Dr. Andrew Weil shared about several of his tripping stories, which was really entertaining. He shared one about taking psychedelics and learning that you could pet a bee. And that's the cutest and the most adorable story, right? And then we've got Paul Stamets, who is a famous mycologist, who was telling us about how they discovered psilocybin was used in ancient Egypt. And I was on that trip with him in Egypt, so I've gotten to know Paul a bit, and just his excitement and honestly, my excitement about finding how the psilocybin is included in the hieroglyphs and how the Nile is so prime to grow this particular type of psilocybin. And I was even present to a talk between Christiana Musk interviewing Senator Steve Fenberg, where he shared that in college his nickname was Mushroom Steve. And I think all of this is so cool. There's a lot of stigma around psychedelics, and as a result, there's a lot of non-disclosure. So when we see a government official sharing stories like this, I have a lot more hope for its continuing rollout. Which leads me to the conversation that you're about to hear between myself and Dr. Melissa Barker, who is an advocate for psychedelics and the improvement of protocols for complex PTSD. In my office, I personally work a lot with complex PTSD. This is in reference to individuals who may have had multiple traumatic experiences that have built off one another because of the previous one not being resolved. Often we see this in early development of a person's childhood and can be challenging to work with because this is during your very formative years of where your nervous system is developing and your worldview is developing. You know, it's not impossible to work with, though, and it's not impossible to have change. I've seen a lot of powerful growth and change occur for both individuals and for couples. And I say this, that it does take time. It's a slower progression if we're doing it the route of talk therapy or somatic therapy or even EMDR. So in this session, we're going to be talking about how psychedelics can help to speed that process along. We're going to share some of our personal experiences with trauma and therapy and how psychedelics have helped. And now, I really want to emphasize that trauma work needs to be done with a trained facilitator or a therapist. This is not the work to be done with a coach who has zero training in trauma in their background or a friend who has been called by the psilocybin spirit to now be a shaman, premature of the training and the apprenticeship that is required of that. And I also don't believe that psychedelics are for everyone. Trauma has layers of complexities that include transference, countertransference from the practitioner themselves, regression of ages, sensitivities that if a person isn't trained, they won't be able to hold it as effectively. Similarly, the person who is receiving the psychedelic, we want to make sure that you are safe. We want to make sure that you're safe. We want to make sure that this is appropriate for you. So my ask for you is to take this information as education, as inspiration for hope for your journey, as well as inspiration for you to do the vetting process to find whether this is a right fit for you and to find someone who is able to safely hold you in the depths of this work. So use the free guide in my show notes that has all the questions for you to consider and ask for yourself on the journey to finding the right facilitator. What I absolutely love about Dr. Melissa in this conversation is the levity that's brought to a topic that can be so heavy and all-encompassing. This is a powerful episode, and I'm excited for you to listen. Be sure to leave me a heartfelt review. I read them, and it is an absolute joy. If you have a loved one experiencing the pain of trauma and sexual assault, then maybe this is going to be helpful along their journey, and I would love if you would share. And before we get to Melissa, I am co-facilitating an exciting couples retreat called Love and Leather with Mistress Colette Pervet, where we will guide you through an immersive journey that will empower you and your beloved to unleash your deepest desires and experiences around deeper levels of consciousness and erotic play. You and your partner will explore the two sacred arts of Tantra and BDSM to unlock its synergistic power in the bedroom and beyond. This is a weekend for all levels as we support the playful mindset around beginning exploration as well as deepening of skill and intimacy. Want to join us? Space is limited so that we can keep it in a small container. Go ahead and check out the link in the bio. Now to our powerful and hilarious guest, Dr. Melissa Barker, who had me in stitches before we started pushing record. I was like, girl, you gotta slow down. We got good material coming right now.
Exactly.
We need to push record. So Dr. Melissa is an entrepreneur. She's an activist and an emerging voice in the growing psychedelics movement. She is the founder of the Phoenix Project, a community-led mental health tech platform created by survivors for survivors. I'm so happy to have you on. I was really looking forward to this conversation.
Likewise, I am just so happy the stars aligned and we got it done. Plumbing issues aside, I'm here.
She told me she had chaos running through the house before hopping on here. And I was like, yeah, I'm glad you could resource yourself and come and sit with me and laugh about the cosmic hilarity of it all.
Exactly. I'm on my giant sheepskin rug, so I'm all grounded. I'm in my zone.
Yeah, you're all pleasure. She's like, I'm gonna talk to Dr. Kat. I'm gonna make this pleasurable.
Or make this enjoyable. Exactly. This is fun. This is a fun thing to do on a Wednesday.
Yes.
But thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even just adding to that concept of the cosmic hilarity and you're adding pleasure, you're making your experience enjoyable. Like these are the things that really help us with trauma, you know, really help us when we've gone through distressing experiences or, you know, PTSD, like finding the enjoyment, finding the levity, finding the things that help us to expand again.
Exactly. Like laughter is the best medicine. And I think as trauma survivors, joy is actually what feels more weird to us, which feels more foreign at times. And so when you can resource and refill up and be like, all right, the whole morning just kind of exploded. And it was not the day of the morning. I thought it was going to be the day I'm recording a podcast. What can I do to resource myself? And I'm like, my giant sheepskin rug. I'm going to record on my phone today. I never do that, but it's what I've got. Mm-hmm. And just like be honest and authentic. Like you and I dropped in right away. And I was immediately felt like, all right, let's do this thing. Let's have an awesome conversation.
Yeah.
You know? And it's fun. It's a privilege. It's a pleasure to get to do this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something there too. Cause I was feeling really grounded there. So there's even this, you know, how can we co-regulate as a resource that helps us to expand back into groundedness too?
Oh, 100%. And co-regulation is such a beautiful thing. Like our nervous systems are hardwired to connect and be in connection and be in community. And so when you can laugh with another person or you can tell a story and you feel witnessed and seen, that type of co-regulation is magic. You know, it just does incredible stuff for our healing, for our brain pathways, for all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And for people who've gone through trauma, I know that connection can be one of the hardest things to really grasp and understand. You know, I've, I also went through significant trauma as young and as a young adult. And it was like, I remember sitting in a group of friends who were like my close community and feeling, and we were all in a cuddle puddle. And I was like, I don't feel connected. Like, why don't I feel connection here? Mm-hmm. And maybe we can start, maybe we can start with that. You know, we're in a world where, you know, we use these words, connection, but connection is such a complex word and process that we don't realize. We just use it and we're like, let's connect. But what does that fucking need for somebody who's gone through trauma?
Totally. It's a whole
different,
exactly. It's like a whole, it's a whole different experience. It's like connection is an embodied practice as a trauma survivor. It's also learning your edges, right? There's like some edging in there, learning like, okay, maybe like I can go into this cuddle puddle to this point, or like I can be there for 5 minutes and then I need to go leave and resource, you know, that titration piece that we don't always get taught as trauma survivors. And I believe so much of our agency is taken from us when we've had trauma, right? And so there's this part where we don't even trust ourselves and our inner knowing. So when our body is giving those alarms of like, I don't feel connected here, I don't feel seen, we sometimes can go through that mental process of like, am I just having a trauma response? Am I like, you know, like robbing myself of joy? Am I not, you know, resourcing properly? When really it could just be as little as like, I've hit a growth edge and I just need like a couple minutes to resource and maybe I go back to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those are practices like as trauma survivors, we don't get those normalized, like as micro practices of like, that's, it's okay to have these tools in your toolkit. Nothing's wrong with you. You're just regulating your nervous system, you know?
Yeah. It's okay. It is okay. Mm-hmm. Which if you've gone through trauma, things are dangerous. We're picking up these cues of danger in our environment. Yeah. So there is, I love how you said that. Yeah. We lose our sense of agency. Agency is the power that we have for ourselves to make a choice. Mm-hmm. But if we're hypervigilant of the environment, or if we're looking to other people for the answer, because we don't trust our own, it's like, we're perpetuating that loss of agency.
Totally. That loss of self. And I actually, there was a like meme going around Instagram for a while that was like the true flex or something was like, is a calm nervous system. And I saw a trauma, very like trauma informed. I'm blanking on her name. Dr. Jenny King, I want to say. She's with the Trauma Institute, I think out in Ohio, but she corrected it and wrote, it's actually a flexible nervous system, you know, a nervous, right? Exactly. All the trauma informed people are like, yes, but it's flex. true. Like, it's like, you have to like understand that sometimes your body is going to be like, I need to pull back, you know, and that's okay. You don't have to second guess yourself or go into this, what I call like trauma shame, where it's like, oh, I'm being hypervigilant. I'm taking myself out of the experience. I'm not dropping in. I should, right? It's sometimes just meeting that moment and saying, something in me is saying, I need to pull back. I'm going to pull back, resource, and then check back in. And that's that flexibility, right? That superpower, truly. But as trauma survivors, again, like we lose that part of ourselves that we trust, especially when we've had trauma at such a young age, like myself and you. So yay, we're in that club together.
Yeah. The formative years when the nervous system has been designed, it's programmed in this, like, there's more danger in the environment than there is safety. So we need to be on in order to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like when we, and I don't know if this is the same for you, but I've noticed like when I actually don't have the hypervigilance on and I'm in the flow, something will catch me and I'll be like, wait, what? Am I okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Like I gotta, you know, learning, like relearning, like what it feels like also to feel peace in my nervous system. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That.
You know, there's so much in this social media world of the use of the word trauma. And as a trauma therapist, you know, there's this part of me that's like, yay, people are becoming more informed about how this isn't, we're not broken. It's literally this inner complex structure that's trying to keep us safe. And then another part of me is like, ooh, I'm seeing people literally say, yeah, that's my trauma. That's my trauma. And is that causing a disempowerment of us being able to take ownership and do the deeper work to figure out what the vulnerable need is at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually, it's been really interesting. When I started the Phoenix Project, it was in 2018 on the heels of Me Too. And when I was talking to investors or potential, you know, people to like be part of the platform that we were building, I would hear, I mean, I, without like a doubt, 4 out of 5 times, someone would say, well, I don't have any trauma. I don't know what this trauma thing is you're talking about. I get it. Like trauma, people have trauma, but I don't understand. I don't think that's relatable. Right. Then the pandemic happens and all of a sudden everybody's talking about trauma. Like it's like this sudden shift in the last 3 years in consciousness and same thing, like the conversation and normalizing, like, yes, we have trauma and there's big trauma and little trauma. And let's, you know, like have these really beautiful informed discussions. And I worry too, that it's just getting painted on everything. You know, it's like everything is trauma. And it's like, well, no.
So let's start there.
Everything is trauma.
Yeah. How do you conceptualize trauma to help people to really anchor into that?
To really anchor in. That's a good question. Actually, I haven't thought about that in a while, but I think it's like basically when something has happened too hard, too fast for the body to actually understand or the brain, like it's really quick and it's almost like that whiplash, right? Like, okay, that was jarring. That was something that like took you out of your experience. That's something like shifted the way your brain, you know, processed information, especially like we're talking about the formative years. So much deep trauma can happen in those years and impact you as a full-fledged adult, you know? But there's also like, I understand that experiences can feel traumatic, right? And I don't want to, you know, erase that experience for people, but it's not the same as like, I've had this really hard trauma, like this incident happened that shifted, like suddenly my life went from like, you know, there's me before the trauma, me after the trauma. And there's this massive difference, right? And how I'm relating to the world, how I'm feeling in my body, how I'm dealing with stress, et cetera, right? And life in itself can be traumatic. Like there are
distressing.
Or distressing. Exactly. Totally. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, you know, and I have a 19-year-old daughter. And so Gen Z is all like trauma, everything's trauma, like everything is trauma. And I was like, at first I was like, damn, this generation's like hella talking about trauma. Like I'm kind of into it. And then I was like, Kayla, like, because your professor didn't email you back, that's not trauma. That's annoying and frustrating, but like, you don't need to trauma bond with your peers about that situation, you know? So it's like understanding like, where's the middle ground. And I think we're at like a really interesting place overall about finding middle grounds and not going to extremes, you know, collectively. But yeah, for me, it's like, it's this truly like index event. And obviously you can have big traumas and little traumas. They don't all have to be like a pandemic or an assault, but they, you know, there's a spectrum. They exist in that and they shift the way that you live, right? The way that you, your brain even processes information.
Yeah. This part has this new perspective about how, how much more danger cues there are in the environment.
Absolutely. But yeah, but it's such an interesting conversation and like question, because a lot of like pop psychology, you know, Instagram and TikTok's psychology is like really throwing out that trauma thing.
I like to add to that too, that there's this, distressing events that are annoying and hard. And then also the trauma is an incomplete process of the nervous system and the brain to be able to process through something that causes like a, I like to use the word short circuit. That's not exactly what's happening, but it is like,
it's a glitch.
It's working as it needs to, but it's not the fluid processing.
Totally. Like something has been shifted, right? Like it's not on the same page or wavelength it was prior to said event, you know? And I think there's, you know, adding to the trauma conversation, like there's PTSD and then there's CPTSD. And I'm sitting here like with my popcorn being like, when are we going to really dig the fuck into CPTSD? Because that is, even like in the psychedelic space, that's a different animal to work with, you know? It's a different way to get into that spiral of the traumas and start to get them to unravel in the body, the nervous system, everything.
So explain the difference between those two and then let's go into that psychedelic conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it. So the way that PTSD and CPTSD were basically described to me was like, and I'm an academic doctor. I'm not a psych, but I still have plenty of therapy under my belt, you know, and all that experience. But I was working actually with a clinician when I was starting ketamine treatments. And she explained to me, she's like, the quickest way to think about CPTSD and PTSD is like, PTSD is like, maybe there's one or two index events that occurred, right? Where these traumas occurred. And you can see like before the person had the trauma and after the person had the trauma, you can see a shift in, say, their behavior, their coping mechanisms, their relationship patterns, et cetera, right? CPTSD is compounded trauma over and over and over. And it actually shapes the behavior, the nervous system, almost like the personality of the survivor. And it's so deeply wound that it's a lot of deep work to get into, like, who was I even before said traumas, you know? And so it just requires a lot more like going to the, it's like going, like you're chiseling, right? You just got to keep chiseling away. You know, it just requires a lot more of like the unpacking to get to like the core stuff of how, you know, those traumas impacted your coping mechanisms, your behaviors, but again, like became so deeply embedded in the self that there's, it's hard to separate the two.
Yeah. It's the blend. It's like a blendedness of all these parts that, that have been formed from the multiple traumas. Yeah,
exactly. And they all have, like, I'm sure you're familiar with IFS. Like they're all, and IFS and psychedelics are like besties, you know, like those parts created, you know, out of these traumas to cope with, to survive, to do all the things, right? Have like their own ecosystems within them also. You know, they have their own behaviors, they have their own coping mechanisms, their own voices, you know, at times. Like, how do you then unravel that from the true self? And how do you bring on, you know, the true self more and more? And I think psychedelics can do amazing, amazing things for PTSD. They already are.
Yeah,
I think that they can do incredible things for CPTSD, but it's a different protocol. It's a different, it's a longer game, you know?
Tell us more about that. What do you see as the difference there?
Yeah. So I feel like, especially with MDMA and everything that's happening in psychedelics, like PTSD, you can have those results of like one or two treatments, you know, high intensity therapeutic treatments. And it's just incredible, incredible that we're finding cures for PTSD. I mean, that is, there are moments where I'm just all, whew, what a time to be alive, you know? And then over here on the CPTSD camp, right? It's all, so we need a couple more than like two hits of heavy MDMA. You know what I mean? Like, it's deeper. There's more work to be done. There's more, I think with CPTSD, there's more groundwork to lay with practitioners because there's got to be so much trust built. So like it takes a while to get there. And then I think though also with CPTSD, you have to understand it's not going to be a protocol of one or two treatments. It's going to be more treatments over longer periods of time. It's going to probably, I think, take years versus I think with MDMA, what they're showing like two treatments with them. And then basically they're seeing massive reduction in PTSD symptoms. The CPTSD, and I can speak from experience of using MDMA a fuck ton. It takes more. It takes more going back there and like re-hitting it and having to kind of break through that veil, right? To get it to a place where like your nervous system can regulate through, you know, a deeper journey and find healing.
And here's coming back to the word you used earlier, titration. You know, these are really powerful. I work with ketamine in my office. I'm studying with MAPS for MDMA right now. Awesome. And so it's like, those are excellent. But there's like with my clients who have CPTSD, we're doing a lot of prep, like several sessions beforehand to get them even into the place where they're resourced and they're ready to drop into that and then have, you know, that greater expansion. And then there's, a lot setting them up with the integration. What are the practices to help you maintain that? Otherwise it's just like a cool trip.
Yeah. You're like, cool. I did some drugs and it was therapeutic. Awesome. I did some Molly and it maybe fixed my brain. I felt fucking fantastic. Cool. No, exactly. Like the prep and the pre and the post, I think we see, I know actually CPTSD need to be a more robust protocol. And what I love about the psychedelic space is there's so much room for expansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And exploration and having these conversations. And I'm a trained autoethnographer, you know, so I did my dissertation in. So I study the self, and like, I believe the power of research is in the self, right? Because the self knows it, right? So we need more survivors that have CPTSD to be like, this is the protocol I've been doing.
Yeah.
This is like how many integration sessions I needed after that really hard journey, or, you know, this is the combination I needed to get me through that hard journey. I had a really, really hard MDMA journey in December. I had to use ketamine to really help me integrate post-journey, because it's like big, big stuff came up that my body had been holding for like 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was all, oh, hello. Mm-hmm. Another door in the trauma house to go through. And then afterwards, my body was all, what the fuck?
Uh-huh.
Like the cat's out of the bag, you know, like what are we going to do? And ketamine, I was fortunate enough to be working with a therapeutic guy that was like, let's do some microketamine journeys to help like integrate, you know, but those protocols are very, I don't want to say they're not documented. I know that they are getting documented, but it's like, we don't have that robust, like treatment plan yet, I believe, for CPTSD.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I love that you use the ketamine as a tool for integration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something to be said too. You know, we talk about these macro experiences with high doses of psilocybin or high doses of MDMA. And it's like, there's also power in high doses of ketamine, right?
Yeah.
But there's also power in these smaller doses that help you to stay connected with your body, but it's almost like, you're able to float just a little bit enough. There's added spaciousness so that you can have dialogue with your parts without it dysregulating you.
Absolutely. What I think has been the most interesting for me is like, I don't need these massive macro journeys as much, right? Like the more that I do my work and my healing, and the more that I've like gone in and like, you know, really hit the chisel hard, right? With a big macro journey, the micro journeys are actually where more expansion, more regulation is happening, and deeper healing is happening. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a conversation too around like, what does microdosing look like collectively for CPTSD? What does that protocol look like or feel like? And understanding, you know, yeah, it's kind of fun. Like ego's like, I'm going to do this massive, you know, psychedelic journey and it's going to take me wherever I go. You don't always need that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had Paul Austin on talking about microdosing a couple of episodes ago, and we dove into that, and it just, there is power in the little.
Yeah, there is. And I think that's also like with healing, there's power in these micro moments. Like the same thing, I believe like as trauma survivors, we think like, oh my gosh, I've got to be like an X amount of hours of therapy and X amount of integration work. There's also power in these micro moments of healing. Like right there is a tiny moment where your brain, you know, rewires that little bit, or that neural pathway is like, oh, I didn't react the same way. Like I made a micro shift, and that actually adds up cumulatively, you know,
imprinting.
Which is beautiful. Imprinting. Yeah, exactly. Imprinting
these memories. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And like micro, like we started before we jumped on, like talking about self-care, like micro moments of self-care are so nourishing and good for the nervous system. We don't always have time to go to Costa Rica on some massive retreat, you know, like sometimes it's all okay. I had a stressful morning, and I'm sitting on my giant sheepskin rug for this podcast, you know? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's a micro moment of care, and it's regulating my nervous system.
That is a yes. And it's in those moments that we can expand the nervous system's capacity. So we're strengthening the nervous system's capacity to hold higher states of energy and big emotion without dysregulation.
All of it. Yeah. Totally. Like window of tolerance, right? Just got a little bit bigger. Yeah, I was about to jump on with you and I was all, fuck. This morning is not going the way I thought it was going to go. And then I'm like, okay, Melissa, resource, you know, giant sheepskin rug, drop in. I'm glad that we had a couple minutes to chat before. And, you know, here we are. We're doing the thing.
Here we are.
Yeah. Doing it.
Yeah.
Again, even flexible nervous systems. We're going with the flow. We're finding like micro moments to resource and showing up.
Mm-hmm. And pausing.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we need to.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And laughing. More laughter.
Yeah. Oh God. I got lots of that. Got lots of that. Before the podcast, you were sharing with me too, that you've been in a big process yourself. Mm-hmm. That's been dysregulating to your nervous system and you learning how to, and I'm using this word specifically, self-leadership to find yourself in the safety and creating the safe space and to meet your needs, which letting our listeners know, that's another IFS term that we use to help to build intrinsic sense of safety. Mm-hmm. That, okay, I got me. Even if the world doesn't turn out the way that I think it should, I got me.
Exactly. I am walking that right fucking now. So as I shared with you before we jumped on, I'm in the midst of a breakup, a really hard breakup. We were together for 2 years and I actually found out post breakup that he had cheated the whole time, that there was a lot of betrayal, a lot of lying. I mean, all the things. Mm-hmm. But what I really had to come to terms with was that he is a covert narcissist, like textbook. I mean, I had to put on my academic brain a little bit and be like, oh yeah, check, check, check. You know what I mean? I'm all, yep. And it's been humbling to me on so many levels, you know, humbling to my nervous system, my brain, my, I think that ego, you know, when we've been through some shit, we're like, there's no way I've got more, you mm-hmm. know, no, that's not life. Life is going to keep on lifing. And I am actually in an Airbnb in Sacramento right now, Midtown Sacramento, because this breakup was so intense for me. I had to leave the Bay Area for a little bit and put myself in a different space energetically and physically to really dig in and process what I had been through and what I was coming out of. And just like you said, that's like that self-leadership, you know, that part of me that came online, which, I mean, I'll just jump in. We're on the psychedelic part. Mm-hmm. It came to me in a mushroom journey. I did a macro journey with some shrooms. And in the journey, I came face to face with myself and I like read my ass, like, but with humor. It was the most interesting thing. I was just like laughing the whole time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like you have been like putting on the blinders. Like, you know, this stuff, like you have been ignoring yourself. Like it was, but all with this levity to it, which was really, really beautiful. And in the journey, I actually wrote a letter to Sad Bitch. It's literally like, dear sad, sad bitch, like to myself, right? This is not healthy. This is toxic. You're in a trauma bond. Like I actually had a dialogue with my sad bitch who was really like, oh, was she hooked on the suffering? And she was like, I can't walk away. I can change him. You know, she was doing all the stuff. She was basically playing out like 4-year-old wounded me, you know? And I held her with like deep compassion, but also with like real witnessing and unwavering witnessing. And the medicine just kept showing me like, this isn't that you have to get out. You have to get away. And actually in the journey, I wrote a checklist to myself. I'll have to send you a screenshot of it. It's pretty hilarious. A checklist of like, this is how you start to move forward. And like, step one was like, move out of the Bay Area for a little bit, you know, like you need a change. And there was like a PS, you seem to like Sacramento right now. Cause I was actually an Airbnb in Sacramento when I had this journey. Step two was like, listen to more Drake. There you go. Okay. And like, you know, step three was like, start to put yourself back together bit by bit, you know? And it was just like, it ended up being, you know, in the time I was laughing, and I was just like, this is fucking hilarious. Like, what is happening? I'm calling myself a sad bitch. I'm like, right, you know, reading sad bitch's ass up and down. And then I came out of that journey and in the post-integration, I was like, oh my gosh. Like I was truly calling to myself saying, Melissa, we have to get out of this. This is crushing us. Like we cannot stay in this. And I'm coming to the end of my journey with Sacramento. I mean, not forever, but like this Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And I was walking my dog the other day and I was like, saved my life with that. Like, I don't know where I'd be if I had stayed in the Bay Area at the time. And this is before I even knew about all the cheating and all the stuff that come out, right? Like it really, truly, like listening to myself, trusting myself, having that moment of like, I don't know why I'm going to Midtown Sacramento, but I am, you know?
Yeah.
Just taking that and trusting that and believing in that part of me that said, this is what we need, truly saved my life and immediately put me on a different path. Wow.
You know, so this is you being able to develop that relationship with your inner parts to be able to, to discern what's going on from more of an objective perspective, and then to identify what you need to be able to take care of yourself.
Exactly. And have that adult me come online.
Yeah.
Right. Like 4-year-old me. I've since named her Felina. I don't know where that came from, but I was like, she needs a name. And I was like, Felina. And I'm like, okay, Felina. Felina's the one. Felina's sad bitch. Felina is the sad bitch. It's like, I'm going to stay in this. I can change him. I can love him. Like, and it gets into, you know, those parts of me, like where that 4-year-old little girl learned abandonment really early from having a bipolar mom that was unmedicated and undiagnosed.
Yeah.
From having, you know, her whole world kind of flip upside down when her twin brothers were born. Mm-hmm. And like suddenly all my mom and dad could do was focus on the twins, you know, and I was this 4-5-year-old little kid having to learn to self-soothe and take care of myself and feed myself and emotionally regulate myself, you know, at such an early, tender age. Right. So of course, you know, something got in those wires of, well, if I had been a better, if I was better, if I was a good girl, if I, you know, didn't make my mom mad, like I wouldn't lose love. And then I can see how that 4-year-old like came into this relationship with my ex and she would be sticking it through to try to be the good girl, to try to be loved, to try not to lose love again, to, you know, think, and we lived together. We had, you know, there's a whole bunch of like layering in here. But when my adult came online in the form of writing sad bitch and a note, my adult was like, you're a 41-year-old woman. Mm-hmm. We're gonna pick up our stuff and we're gonna go take care of ourselves. And we're gonna remember that we have that capacity and we can do that. I've also been so fortunate to have like one of my best friends living with me. Mm-hmm. So there's been so much laughter and fun and just cackling laughter, you know, like when you get into the cackling laughter. So there's been so much healing in that too. I mean, she has like literally drawn me baths at time and let me just sit there sobbing.
Yeah.
And it's really reminded me also like, yes, we can self-lead and we can do these things and we need community.
We need community.
We need connection, you know, and it doesn't make you codependent to like, yes, codependency can get in there, but like, it doesn't make you codependent to need someone to also help you in those really hard moments. You know, community is magical.
That's been one of my lifetime parts that I've had to work with. The burden of the belief that I have a very ultra independent part. And it was always afraid. And even in romantic relationships now, I communicate. I'm like, okay, I'm observing right now that the part of me is my ultra independent part is running up against this edge because you're taking care of me. And I just have to remind it that this isn't codependency.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Totally. Literally. I mean, like I joined, it's actually interesting in the course of like this relationship kind of unraveling and my daughter going off to college, I joined Codependence Anonymous because I was like, I got some shit to look at, you know, and realized I have this hyper independent part.
Yeah.
Which is actually a reaction to like trauma, essentially, you know, like it's that it part is. That's like, I don't want to be a burden. I'll take care of myself. Again, like 4-year-old me, that was all, my whole world is upside down. I have to take care of myself. That's why I don't upset my mom, you know, but same thing. I'll do the same thing. I'll be like, my brain is telling me
my part
that I am a burden and that you hate me. My friend Chris will be all, no. She's like, bitch, take a bath. You're tired. Like you're going through a lot. And so I'm all, okay. But it's, you know, it's clunky and it's funky to do it, but like, that's truly what we have to do. Again, like going back to CPTSD, we have to unravel these parts that we thought made us a burden or made us bad or made us unhealed or unlovable. Like we have to really get in there and be like, okay, 4-year-old Melissa is talking right now. Yeah. I'm going to hold her with love and compassion. I'm going to turn towards her rather than put her in the corner, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or truth with a capital T. Like this is me. I am a burden. I am codependent. I am independent. Yeah. Or help. One for me was, if somebody were to help me, there's something attached to it.
Yes. They want something. Yeah.
They want something or it's a manipulation tactic to keep me, to keep me there. Yeah.
I have like, with this past relationship, there's been so much growth and I'm still like, we're almost at the, like, going into the 3-month, you know, post breakup. So like mm-hmm. getting to that glow up, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm like starting to like see the lessons and I'm like, okay, I don't need to paint the whole thing with this global brush of like, fuck him, narcissist asshole. It's like, actually the and, mm-hmm. and I can see where I was able to soften with him at times. And then I could see those parts of me that came online thinking I didn't deserve a partner that was going to like hold me in everything. And I can, you know, like, yeah. it's kind of like getting into it and realizing there are also gems in all the shit, you know? And like you said, the capital truth, like I had this really, also after another journey, after a ketamine journey, microketamine journey too, like tiny bit of ketamine took me again to myself. And in this one, I was like in a room and it's all white and peaceful. And I was like, this is great. You know, I'm going to like meditate, you know, I'm just going to have this like tiny little ketamine journey. And all of a sudden I look and there's like me sitting in a chair and I'm like, bitch, no, we're not doing that. I don't want to talk to you. And I kept looking for the window to get out. And finally, like, I just sat down, like pulled up a chair and like sat and talked to essentially my higher self, you know? And she just held, like, there wasn't dialogue. It was like energetic exchange. Mm. And the next morning I woke up and I did one of the most real, like capital T truth self inventories I've ever done in my life mm-hmm. about my relationship. And I was like, yeah, there were times that I was toxic. There were times that I was, my reactions were not, you know, appropriate for what was happening. There were times that like 4-year-old, 5-year-old me took the reins. There was times where my teenager took the reins. Like there was self-abandonment. There was times that I blamed him for everything and didn't take ownership over my experience and my, you know, processing of things or whatever. And mm-hmm. it was incredible. It was like this really beautiful gift to myself. And it just felt freeing, you know, yeah. to sit in that much truth and to not take it on and create a story that I'm bad or unhealed or unlovable.
Yeah.
It was really powerful.
Oof. You, yeah, again, showing up for your parts, mm-hmm. giving them the mm-hmm. presence, the patience, the compassion. You know, these yeah. are all ideal parent self.
Yes.
Right?
Totally.
Reparenting yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I think like is another thing that I'm seeing it not as often in like pop psychology, but it's out there, you know? And I think that's another deeper conversation to have of like, what does reparenting look like? Mm-hmm. What are those practices? Even if they're micro, you know, these micro practices of reparenting the self. And I think it's Elizabeth Gilbert. I heard a quote where she said something about like the most at peace people she's ever seen are the ones that have the capacity to hold all parts of themselves. Mm. They almost build like an auditorium for all of their parts. So there's their divine, and then there's their messy, mm-hmm. toxic, you know, there's all these parts of themselves being held rather than turned away. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's the goal, right? It's not easy.
Yeah.
Being a human is extremely complicated.
And entertaining. I do it for the plot. Do it for the plot.
Totally. My friend and I were at dinner last night and she's all, do you think you're coming back? And I was all, bitch, no, I'm done. I'll come back as a plant. Like I'm this human skin thing. I'm going to say no, thank you. But I was laughing about it. You know, like it's, you get so much practice in these human suits.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And yeah, I think I might come back as a family golden retriever, truthfully.
Totally. I would like to come back as my dog. I was like, you know what? Coco has a good life. I could come back as Coco. That would be bad. Like the dogs that get to go on summer camp trips and stuff like that. Like that dog, right?
Yeah. Like, adventures. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe
this is good.
Yeah. Maybe an ayahuasca dog where I sit in ceremony and I just like,
yeah. Oh,
comfort people.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I'm going to start meditating on these ones. I'll be like, all right, if I have to do it, I'm coming back as a dog.
Yes.
And these are my parameters. These are my asks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, coming back to this idea of, you know, the breakup that you just went through, I also mm-hmm. see that as its own trauma itself, because yeah. you can become hypervigilant afterward. Yep. You can become, you know, every time you see their name, I remember times mm-hmm. where I would have these full like flutters in my body, or there was, mm-hmm. I went through a breakup, with a lover back, you know, earlier this year, and it left me every time they were around, my whole body would turn away. Mm-hmm. Like my eyes would avert. And at first I had so much shame. I was like, oh, I don't like that. I don't like being avoidant. But when I would have these conversations with this person, I would get, they'd say I'm attacking them, or like, I was like, as calm as could be. I was,
I know that game.
Yeah. And so it's also like this, in that process, having to sit and do through my own process. Okay. My parts are afraid. You know, if these reactions are happening, then there's fear. And what is that piece about? Okay. What is this part afraid is going to happen to me? And then how can I show up for these parts in a way that's not self-abandoning? Oh, I don't have to be their friend.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. I don't have to talk to this person anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it actually shifted completely. I was able to look the person in the eye and soften a smile without while knowing that I don't have to develop a friendship with them. They can be in the field, they can be in the community, and I'm not going to be hurt because I know that I'm not going to let them in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel very fortunate that he and I are in totally different worlds, like 100%. So like, there's really no reason for our lives to intercross. And I'm definitely like high-fiving me from 2 years ago. I was like, good job on that one, you know? Mm-hmm. But it has brought on those parts of like the hypervigilance and like going into, thinking about dating or like talking to people. And I'm like, I don't want to bring all that baggage, right? Like, I don't want to bring what I'm still like healing or processing to like someone new. Right. So that part's there, but also I left the Bay Area. I fully left like where I'm born and raised. I have my whole family, my life, my daughter's at UC Santa Cruz. So it's closer to the Bay, all those things. Right. I left all these things behind and was really judging myself in the beginning. And now I'm understanding more of what this journey was. And as of like literally a couple of days ago, I was like, I think I'm going to go back to the Bay Area. And I don't feel the charge I was feeling before. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I have to dim myself or make myself small to avoid him.
Yeah.
I actually feel like if I saw him, same thing, I could soften into a smile and keep it moving.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to my therapist about this actually this morning. Student phone therapy while the plumber's here. It was the morning. My therapist was like, you're having a day. I'm like, I am. But I was telling her, she's like, every time you want to blame him, or go to him as a narcissist or him as, these things. She's like, don't give that power away. Like turn into yourself and go, what parts of me were activated? What parts of me are coming up for healing? Mm-hmm. What part of my story, was re-triggered? Because I was, some of those parts that came out that were super reactive and dissociative. And I now understand were coming out to protect me. Mm-hmm. To keep me safe. But he was really masterful at making me feel so, just putting me in that shame spiral because of those parts. Those parts are looking for healing too, And I feel like I've made that change of like, my healing is not dependent on him in the world. Mm-hmm. My healing is mine and I'm taking it back and I'm owning it. And I can do the heavy lifting of like that time that I cut up his cup box. What part was activated there? I can get into that. And I had to actually because I stayed in the cycle so long with him, I actually had to watch him bring on new supply. And then I got to see the discard happening. And it was finally like something clicked in me where I was like, I'm done playing. I'm going to get off this treadmill because he is narcissistic and this is what he does. And this is how he's like, this is what he has to do to regulate himself, right? He's got to have new supply. He's got to have these things. And like the moment I took myself off that treadmill, it was so empowering. Mm-hmm. I didn't personalize like, he's already got some new, whatever in his life. I was able to be like, that's him and he's doing him. And it says nothing about me as a person.
Yeah.
It's not it doesn't have to define me and my healing. Because he did all the things like everyone thinks you're crazy and I've told everyone. Sure. The smear campaign was, I'm sure, like chef's kiss, like top tier, right? And I really struggled with those parts of me that had come out. And I was like, some of that stuff is not a lie. Like there was times that I showed up in toxicity, in reactiveness and all of that. And now I'm learning, to love those parts of myself. And it doesn't matter what he says about me, what he does. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I finally have like made the, it's beyond energetic, right? There's like something where your brain is like yeah, no, we're two separate people and I don't have to take on him. I don't have to give him my power and my healing.
Yeah. The differentiation between you and the other person.
Yeah. 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 And I think when we have trauma, you know, so much of like the self just gets like blended into the other person.
Yeah.
Because we can see ourselves through that other person's eyes and be like, oh my gosh, where do I, you know what I mean? Like,
yep. Yeah. Enmeshment. Yeah.
The blurring. Enmeshment. Exactly. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And more like losing of the self, right? Because I think, again, as trauma survivors, that's sometimes what feels more normal than going, okay, your stuff is yours and my stuff is mine. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to be blended.
I observe that a lot in my more complex PTSD clients is this, when I'm talking to them, they can tend to give me vague answers. Mm. They have a difficult, and then when we try to unpack that, it's really dysregulating for them.
Yeah.
And so for our listeners, if this resonates with you, there's safety, quote unquote, in being in vagueness, because the more clear you are with an answer, the more there's a risk of losing the relationship, getting rejected, having conflict. So to even understand that being amorphous and losing yourself is all a part of the very clever solution of your strategy, of your survival strategy.
Exactly. Exactly. It was so interesting, like coming out of this relationship, like it felt like it took maybe 2 or 3 weeks to kind of have the fog start to lift.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I was getting hit with like memory after memory after memory. And I was going, wow, I can see like the times that I self-abandoned.
Yeah.
Actually, I was working with a tantric coach and she was saying, go through and do an inventory of when your body gave you little pings. Because those were moments where you were getting the hit that something wasn't right, but you were, you know, choosing to stay, for lack of better words, like asleep, right? All out of a status of like trying to survive, right? Yeah. And when I did that inventory, it was actually like really, really hard at first. Like I was like, oh my gosh, my body had so much to tell me. It was just like, I got a whole list. But then like holding it, like going into that, titrating through it, right? So like putting it down when it became too hard, coming back to it, going through it, I actually felt this huge sense of like witnessing of myself. And it was so empowering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then finding compassion of like, yeah, I did self-abandon. There are times that I didn't show up the way I wanted. There are times that I, you know, turned off that part of my brain that's so hypervigilant, you know, and I made it all about like, oh, I'm just trauma and broken. And I really was hard on myself and learning to like go to those parts and heal them and love them, you know? And I, again, like going back to psychedelics, like I think there's such profound healing when you can go in that with that much intention and say, I'm going to heal these moments and kind of like reclaim those parts of my soul.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so beautiful to witness your process. And then even as I'm, you know, you're inspiring me to share my process here too. And it's like for all of our listeners who are here, I want you to know that her program, the Phoenix Project, has tools. She's telling you these tools that have worked for her and you're laying it out so nicely. And you have everybody has that access through the Phoenix Project.
Yeah, we are like what I've dubbed like Phoenix One. We're a free platform. It's a free community. Anyone can join. We have these resources. We have these toolkits. We have these things that you can kind of take on a self-paced, you know, approach. The shift has been moving Phoenix more into psychedelics. And so I'm actually in a very Phoenix moment and on all fronts, right? I'm reimagining like what can the new Phoenix be? What is that experience? And the focus is on integration and for psychedelic use. So still in the trauma space, still looking at CPTSD and PTSD, but really looking at how we can help people connect to like top tier integration guides, coaches, therapists, support, and kind of do that matching component. So someone can come in and have that piece, right? And something new that I'm doing, which is totally new for me in my journey with Phoenix, is I'm actually going to start teaching. I'm going to work on a masterclass and putting it together like as we speak to really take women that are survivors through this high touch healing portal, you know, over the course of like 6 or 7 weeks and work with me in that space within a group. And I'm also going to start offering one-on-ones with me, which is something I've never done. I've always been like more behind the scenes building. And I realized like, no, I actually, there's a calling in me too. This is all from the medicine path, right? There's a calling in me too that really wants to work with one-on-one clients also. So I'm expanding my offerings, not only with the Phoenix Project, but with myself also in Phoenix.
Yeah. Amazing. This is such an enriching conversation. Mm-hmm. How can people find more about you? Where can they connect with you?
Absolutely. Thank you. So www.iamphoenixproject.com. I'll make sure you get everything. We're literally revamping the website as we speak to like show these current offerings and just sign up for newsletters. You can also find me on Instagram at Dr. Melissa Barker. Yeah. I think that's my full Insta.
What's your last name?
What's my last name? I was like, did I put my middle in there? No, I think it's just, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm all, what am I? Where am I? yeah, you can find me at Instagram and my profile is private, but I'm happy to add people. It'll probably open up more as I do more, but just please like shoot me a message. Like I love connecting with people. At the end of the day, I am a healer. I'm here to help people heal and I am walking the path myself. So I am not someone that's at the, you know, 50,000 foot view. I'm like this breakup, this experience, like the things I've been going through have really put me back on the path of like, oh yeah. How do we find moments of micro care? How do we nourish ourselves? How do we resource, you know, how do we heal in these human things that we're in?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Some of my favorite teachers are the ones mm-hmm. who are so integritous that they do the work that they teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And that is, some of us get that on our path. That is definitely my dharma.
Yeah. Same.
I'm on that. It sounds like you're the same. I was like, I feel like we could talk forever about mm-hmm. that topic.
Yes. Yes. Stay tuned for our lifelong podcast.
Exactly. The never-ending podcast.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Wonderful conversation. Thank you for all your work in the world and shining your light. Thank you.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for tuning in, lovers. And if you want to experience more ecstasy and sexual liberation, head over to sexlovepsychedelics.com and learn about how you can join me for any one of my online or live events. And while you're there, grab my free guide on sex and psychedelics. Remember, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please contact your healthcare provider and local law before pursuing any of the products or psychedelics discussed. And one final note here. I make this show specifically for you. If you're loving the show, then be sure to leave me a review in iTunes or Spotify to let me know. Happy to be here and happy to serve. I'll see you next time on Sex, Love, Psychedelics.